Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is Gary LeMaster.
Good morning, everyone.
And we have a studio filled with people today, even if you could spill a closet with people.
A whole lot of tree huggers is
what
I understand.
Yeah, tree huggers. We have with us Sandy Barr. Sandy Barr is the director of the Arizona Sierra Club, Grand Canyon chapter. Is that what it's called?
Yep, that's
And you've been you've been in the executive director for a long time.
Yeah, I've been the director for 15 years and have been also a volunteer with the Sierra Club for more than 20 years.
And we have two local Sierra Club members here. Brian and Carol, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, Brian Myers. I'm the chair of the local group here in Sedona Verde Valley, and glad to be here.
And I'm Carol Pazizic, and I've been living here for 13 years, and I have been involved with the Sierra Club for probably 10 years, actively involved in Arizona.
And Carol is the secretary of the Sierra Club and 10 other organizations. So if you need a secretary, I think she's secretaried out. Where should we start, Gary? Well, tell us. Go ahead.
I'd say let's start with telling us what the Sierra Club is about and what it does.
Sure. Well, the Sierra Club is a conservation organization. We have been around for over 100 years, and we work on a variety of things. But the initial impetus for the Sierra Club was the Sierra Club founder, John Muir, thought that if people got out and saw wild places, beautiful areas, that they would connect with them and become better advocates for them. And that's still part of what we do. We take people out hiking and go backpacking and canoeing and all kinds of trips. And a big part of it is, well, obviously we want people to have fun, but a big part of it is that people go, wow, I never knew this was here. One example I have is we took an individual from Paulden on a hike on the Verde River, and he basically said, I did not know the Verde River was right here in my backyard. So that's a big part of what we do. But we also do a lot of advocacy. We have a presence at the state legislature where we advocate for environmental protection. We're involved in public lands management issues, advocating for protective plans for the forests, for national parks. We work a lot on energy issues, promoting renewable energy and clean energy issues, and wildlife programs. We have a lot of threatened and endangered species in Arizona, and we advocate for that as well. And also work a lot on water issues here in the state. But we have a grassroots presence as well. Carol and Brian are both part of our grassroots presence and do a lot of work. I think one of the things I would point out about the Sierra Club is we rely on volunteers, and the volunteers are the leaders in the Sierra Club.
How many folks in the Sierra Club in Arizona?
We have about 12,000 members in Arizona.
And we have a chapter active here in Sedona, of which Carol and Brian are both members. I was going to ask you about the Arizona legislature. My question was, do you have to wear a tinfoil hat when you talk to members of the legislature? Because what's going on down there?
No, but it helps. The legislature, well, I would say the last three sessions have been some of the most challenging sessions I have seen on a number of issues, but certainly on environmental issues. And, one of the things we have seen there the last couple of sessions is a bill that basically is an anti-UN bill and says that if any city, county, any political subdivision of the state does anything that might be loosely connected to the principles of sustainable development that were adopted in Rio in 1992, Well, the bottom line is they can't do that. It prohibits it.
This is the Agenda 21 conspiracy that we spoke about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you hear the discussion and you think, they're not going to pass a bill about it, but yet they do. And this particular bill did pass out of both the House and the Senate, but it passed in different forms. So I don't think it's going to get to the governor and go anywhere, but it's an idea passed last year out of the Senate as well. And they just keep bringing it back and bringing it back. And, you know, Agenda 21, 21 is 21st century. And so we've said, what do they want? Agenda 19?
or 17?
Yes, perhaps.
Why are so many conservatives, not all conservatives, we have green Republicans and so forth, why are they against sustainability? Why is that a word that sets them off? Why would just the fact that sustainability seem controversial, even an evil plot of some kind?
Yeah, I have to be honest, I don't really understand it, other than there has always been, you know, some concern from some people on the far right about the UN and how it would promote one world government. So that is that's where that part of it comes from. And why they latched on to these non-binding principles that were adopted in 1992 is beyond me. And sustainability, basically it's what we all... It's not a new concept, the idea that you shouldn't use more than can be replenished. You should leave something for the next generation and the generation after that and the one after that. Shouldn't be controversial, because that's really all sustainability is. Yet at the Capitol, I actually heard them, you know, talking about bike paths being something that we should be concerned about, and having homes that use less energy being something we should be concerned about.
They wanted to reduce the energy conservation of homes. Was there some sort of a bill like that? You've been director, I guess, for what, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
They must know what you look like. Do they run when they see you, or pretend they don't know who you are? Or what do you actually do? You buttonhole representatives, you try to talk to them about bills and...
Yes. I usually call their assistants and try to get a meeting. And if they won't meet with me, then I try to catch them either coming out of committees or in the hallway, also testify in the committee hearings. And a lot of times, like, some of the big lobbyists will say, why do you do that? You know that committee is hostile. But I think it's important for the Sierra Club to go on the record on these issues and to let them know, here is the problem with a particular bill. This is why we think you should oppose it. And I have to say, we're mostly opposing bills right now. But let them know, like with the energy efficient building codes, people, it's about reducing energy use, which is good for the environment. But it's also good. I mean, it's good for people, because there's more money in their pockets. The foreclosure rate, the default rate on loans, is much lower on energy efficient homes, like 30% lower on energy efficient homes. A real basic human issue. People, can pay their other bills if they're giving less to the utility, right? And you would think that it just be a real common sense thing. But that's the kind of thing I put on the record. And you never know. Sometimes you can make a connection with someone that you thought you didn't have anything in common with. A couple of years ago, we did a bill to promote having better air quality, indoor air quality at schools, because it's a huge issue. And at first it seemed like it was going to go nowhere. And then one of the legislators, who happened to be chemically sensitive, said, actually voted for the bill and then agreed to sponsor it the next year. And so we actually got the bill through. It wasn't as strong as it needed to be. But so just by putting things on the record, you can make connections and you might might not have an opportunity that year or even the next year, but it maybe a few years down the road, you'll be able to move something positive.
You mentioned that the last two or three sessions of the legislature have been particularly challenging. I'd be curious, how has the legislature changed? What was it like, you know, before that as compared to now?
Well, it used to be there was bipartisan support for environmental protection. And there was a core of Republicans who would work with Democrats to promote positive environmental bills. So it wasn't that we were just stopping bad stuff. The other thing is, in my early sessions in the legislature were tough as well. There were a lot of bad bills. Including one in particular we called the Polluter Protection Act. And this bill basically allowed companies to do audits and whatever environmental violations or harm they found, they got to keep it secret in the audit. And then the original bill gave them both criminal and civil immunity for those.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, that bill was vetoed by Fife Symington when he was governor. And there were versions of it that came out over the years. By the way, it was an ALEC bill, American Legislative Exchange Council, back in the early 90s. They're the ones that were first promoting it.
In other words, corporate sponsored.
Exactly. Exactly. And so...
So it would just, like, give them free license, right?
Yeah. And there would be... It would be, I mean, one of the ways that we hold both the government and these companies accountable is by having information. I mean, information is power for sure. And if you can't get the information, then it's difficult to take action. So it's secret and they get immunity. Well, a version of that bill was brought back last year. And it still allows the everything is secret in the audit. It isn't it doesn't have criminal immunity in it, but it does say that none of the information can be used in a civil proceeding or even to fine them. You know, so if you had that information, it wouldn't matter, and it wouldn't matter how bad it was. You could not find them because it was part of that audit. So that bill went through the legislature, got to Governor Brewer's desk, and she signed it. And so here's a bill that we have been able to stop for basically 20 years. And last year it passed and was signed. And so that is how it's changed.
And Brian and Carol, I mean, what are our legislators like here from Sedona, from the Verde Valley?
Well, I had an opportunity to meet with two of them during Environmental Day, and they seem to be pretty hard to the right, and it's difficult to have real conversations with our senator. He seems to have his mind made up. And when you go to talk to him, he's really not very receptive. Now, that was my experience.
This is
perhaps
Bob Thorpe?
No, this
That's
is
Chester Crandall.
And and I get the feeling sometimes that on events like Environmental Day or any of those other events where people go to the Capitol, that some of them will make a nice show of listening to you and they're gracious and they'll let you into the office. And that's as far as it gets, because after you leave, I think they still do what they intended to do in the first place. So it's very depressing.
And Brian, have you been down and talked to any of the legislators, or is it?
No, I haven't yet, no.
Well, all right. So the Sierra Club is trying to protect the environment of Arizona. And Arizona, one of the great C's of Arizona, the five C's of Arizona, is climate and bringing in the tourist industry, which we need our public lands to do. And yet we see the legislature constantly undercutting it. What can the Sierra Club do beyond what you're doing now to try to improve the situation? You work with local groups like Carol and Brian's, right? And you try to coordinate opposition. Now, I think a whole lot of people, at least in our legislative district, have pretty much given up on doing what Carol did, actually trying to talk to the legislature, because they assume their mind is already made up. They're deeply ideologically committed. Facts are not going to really matter to them. So, but you believe it's still worth doing. You should make your presentation. You should send your letter anyway, right?
That's right. Well, first of all, as I said before, you never know where there might be an opportunity. And if you're not there, you won't be poised to take advantage of an opportunity that comes up. And you know, we have been able to, over the years, stop some pretty awful legislation, some huge exemptions from our environmental laws. We have been able to stop those. The last 3 years have been a big challenge on that. There have been some bills that were changed significantly because we brought up issues. If they pass bills that are blatantly unconstitutional, we can and do challenge them. We've challenged ones that were contrary to federal law. For example, the legislature has passed bills where they decided not to implement air quality provisions, but because they were part of a federal plan that the state said it would follow, they were bound to it. And so we were successful in getting that reinstated. So there are those kinds of things. There's also on the federal public lands, luckily the Arizona legislature doesn't control them. If they did, they tried and the people of Arizona soundly rejected that effort last fall.
Wanted to seize and take over our national public lands. Do you really want to hand them over to the tender mercies of the Arizona legislature? What local issues, Brian, Carol, that you could talk to Sandy about here, local environmental issues? I know there's a uranium mine issue up at the Grand Canyon. There's the Verde River.
We're very interested in protection of the Verde River watershed and also the lands around Sedona. You know, there's been a lot of work done on protecting and stopping land exchanges. There's a lot of research that's being done on exactly what forms of protection we can have here in the Sedona area. People have to realize that the main economic engine for the Verde Valley in Sedona is tourism. And if we don't preserve our environment, then it's going to have an economic impact also. So it's profitable and economically viable to be green. You know, there's no dichotomy there.
I find it really fascinating that so-called conservatives can be actually against conservation of the environment and other issues. Let me get go back to the Verde River. You mentioned the concern over that. What is exactly the concern? What's going on?
Well, the biggest concern, especially about the upper Verde, is that it will dry up. And we just issued a report that's on our website. It's called Going with the Flow. And if you don't want to read the whole report, you can read just the key aspects of it. But it basically highlights the fact that the flows in the river are already decreasing and that we could see some portions of the upper portion of the Verde dry up within 10 years even. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, obviously we have ongoing drought but also groundwater pumping in the Big Chino. And one of the issues that threatens it even more is this proposal by Prescott and Prescott Valley to pump groundwater in the Big Chino and import it via a pipeline. And unfortunately, the laws in Arizona don't protect rivers very well. They allow groundwater pumping that really robs the river of its base flow. And there's pretty good research that, and the base flow is nothing more than that flow in the driest part of the year. That's the part that really sustains the river. About 80% of that base flow comes from the Big Chino, so it's a big issue.
Isn't there a prediction that the Verde River will run dry some summers within a few years?
That's the Going with the Flow report outlines that we compiled our own flow monitoring data, but also used USGS data. Salt River Project has a gauge that we used information from as well, and some sections within 10 years.
If you're turning into the podcast from the internet, the Verde River is sort of the heart of the whole Verde Valley. It feeds it. It supported people here for, what, 10,000 plus years.
What would be the impact if the river starts to dry up in the summers? What is the impact for people in terms of drinking water? And I assume negative, but do we have any direct correlation to that?
Well, the Verde River, I live in Phoenix, so I drink some of the Verde River. We get some of our water down in the Phoenix area. It provides irrigation for Verde Valley, Cottonwood, Camp Verde, particular. Recreation, obviously an important issue. And one thing, though, is the plants and animals that rely on the river. If you're a fish, you know, it doesn't matter if the flows come back in a few months, you're still going to be dead if there is no flow. And you cannot sustain populations of fish when you don't have a flowing river. And in Arizona, our native fish are in big trouble already. We have about 20 of the 36 fish native to Arizona are listed as threatened or endangered. So and the Upper Verde is this great opportunity for having native fish recovery, and we would lose it if there was no water.
Do we want to ask about Resolution Copper? You wanted to?
Absolutely. That's one of the primary issues that I wanted to get at is this proposed land exchange and near Superior, I believe, Arizona, that would allow Resolution Copper to do some, open a large mining operation on what Native Americans consider sacred ground, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Yeah. The proposed, they call it the Southeastern Arizona land exchange, and it's basically Resolution Copper, and the primary entity that is part of Resolution Copper is Rio Tinto. So that if people aren't familiar with Resolution Copper, they may be familiar with Rio Tinto. It's a huge mining operation based.
It's based where?
In the UK.
It's not an American company.
That's correct. Most.
As an aside.
Yeah, most of them aren't.
The promise of this is jobs for Arizonans. Could you address how many jobs are we talking about, and is it really Arizonans, or is it people from the UK or elsewhere?
Well, that's a great question, and the jobs number, just like everything else about this proposed land exchange, has changed over the years. Resolution Copper told us in the beginning, well, there's not going to be any land subsidence. And it's a block cave mine, so they go in very deep in the ground. They basically use explosives to blow up the ground and have the ground drop into these carts and haul the ore out. Well, they're saying there'll be no subsidence. Well, mining engineers that we talked to said there will be subsidence. And eventually, they agreed, and they put on their website, here's the line where we think the subsidence will occur. The jobs numbers, each time they come out with a new bill, they go up, 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 despite the fact that we know that the mines are increasingly mechanized And especially a mine like this, where you're going to be, you know, deep underground, thousands of feet underground, it's very likely that a lot of it will be mechanized. Some things they do remotely. And so, would there be jobs? Yes, there would be jobs. Are they sustainable jobs? We don't think so. We've already seen what the boom bust has done to Superior. And that could be one of the reasons that the town of Superior has recently come out against the exchange, as they looked more closely at what was being proposed. Like, you know, hey, I mean, effectively what Resolution Copper is offering the community is chump change. And what they'll do is destroy an area that's important from an environmental perspective, from a recreation perspective, from a cultural perspective, sacred to several tribes. The interesting thing about Oak Flat, and that's the name of the area they want to get, is that it was first protected from mining by President Eisenhower through an executive order. So here's an area that has been protected since basically 1955 from mining, and they want to give it up. And we think that it's so hard to protect lands already from mining activity that this just isn't worth it.
Why did the
there's an impact on the groundwater in the area too from mining?
Absolutely, because when you go that deep, you pump water out of the mine because you have to dewater the mine, and so that is also going to affect Devil's Canyon or Gone Canyon, as the San Carlos call it, and
it's why arsenic is a problem in the water that we are drinking.
The thing I notice is the stinginess of the land trade. Even if you were in favor of it, they're giving us almost no environmentally sensitive land for the amount of for this billions of dollars worth of mining that they want to do.
Exactly. It's not a good deal for the American people. And that's one of the things we've seen over the years, is these land exchanges are huge ripoffs above and beyond all the environmental issues and the cultural issues. It's just a ripoff. And why our congressional delegation insists on, you know, basically giving away our resources to these mining companies is beyond me.
Carol, Brian, do you have announcements? Are there Sierra Club meetings coming up, meetings about the Verde River that folks might want to go to?
Well, we do have Water Sentinels. We're going to be doing several outings this summer. Once a month, what we're going to be doing is testing the Verde River for E. coli. In the past, we found that E. coli spikes in the summertime in particular locations. And what we're trying to do is to find out likely to pinpoint where that E. coli is getting into the water in the first place. So people need to watch for announcements for the Water Sentinels program. But also on June 22nd and 23rd, the Grand Canyon chapter is going to be holding meetings in the Village of Oak Creek at the Verde Valley School. And the conservation meeting takes place on Saturday, the 22nd, and then we have our executive committee meeting the following day. And Saturday evening on the 22nd, we will be having a potluck. And we encourage everyone to bring a favorite dish and come out and meet like-minded folks and talk about the things that are important to them environmentally.
Sandy, thanks for being with us. How would you sum up the most important thing ordinary people can do to not support a club like the Sierra Club, but what can we do to help the environment as individuals?
The most important thing people can do is speak up. I think sometimes the news is discouraging, and I agree, it can be. But it's just too important to leave it to those who would sacrifice the protection of our environment for some short-term profits. We owe it to ourselves and future generations. So I would speak up and say we need to protect this land, the air, the water.
Thank you very much for coming and talking with us, Sandy Barr, of the Sierra Club. you can see, or well, you can listen to all our podcasts on VVID.org. Gary writes wonderful summaries of most of the programs, which adds additional information and support and contact. And we'll put in some links, Gary, right, to Sierra Club yes. site, so that you can, if you go on the website, we'll have links. You can go to the Sierra Club site, both the state and the local chapter. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a beautiful day out there. Don't spend it all in a radio studio.